Welcome back. Vernon Mahabal with us as we're talking about palmistry, his works, of course. Truly amazing. We'll be back with more. We'll get to your calls, too, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Vernon Mahabal with us, of course, talking about his work in palmistry, his books, The Secret Code on Your Hands, the palmistry cards, Crossing Paths as well. I like how you said earlier, Vernon, that we have free will. We can alter things, and that's important.
Yes, absolutely. I met a palmist years ago, and he told me that the fact that we have thumbs proves to him that there's a God. In other words, it's with this thumb that animals don't have, which is the opposing digit, that we're able to brush our teeth, make toothbrushes, do all sorts of, create shape our world. Animals, as wonderful and loving as they are, they don't have an opposable thumb, so they can't change and shape their environment as we can. But the thumb represents, in palmistry, the human willpower, drive, determination, the ability and the desire to be able to make our world better. Or to change our environment, to be in a sense a controller in a good way, hopefully.
do the segmented lines in our fingers mean anything?
You mean those vertical and horizontal lines?
Yeah,
on
those
12 segments.
Those horizontal lines that just go across your fingers, and you got the looks like two per finger.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, those segments, if you look at the hand, you'll see that there are 12 finger segments, and each one of those is a different astrological sign, such as Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, Leo, Virgo, like that. And if you have these verticals, what I call activation verticals, it means that the planetary energies are working. You're able to take what's in that, let's say that Pisces section, and be able to do something with it. And if you have too many horizontals in those segments, it means that there's a blockage there. Whatever talent or ability you have, based on what that segment represents, is not coming out in your life. And so those verticals are very, very important. Those lines are very important. Yes.
So we're looking at, and people, you'll probably get some phone calls about this, about soulmates and the perception of what a soulmate is. Do the palms say anything? I mean, can you match up palms, for example?
Oh, yes, absolutely. A soulmate to me is two people who have been together for at least one or two lifetimes. Have you ever noticed that sometimes people may, let's say, go out together and they may even argue a lot on their first few dates? They're constantly arguing and they're always having problems, but they stay together.
Yeah.
It's because they're simply just reviving a past previous relationship.
Or they click, right away.
Exactly. And why do they click? Because the soul is remembering that, hey, I've loved you in a previous life and you've loved me. So the soul is remembering. So much of what we do, George, is subconscious. It's unconscious. We don't always do things in this life for reasons. How many times have people said, oh, I went against my best instincts? That type of thing, or we ultimately do things for emotions. We are emotional beings. The soul is purely emotional. You know, the soul is not just a little ball of energy. It's actually pure emotional, devotional substance. It's the soul is love. It's personified love. That's what the soul is. It's not just a ball of energy or a ball of light or just some. It's pure, unadulterated, 100% devotional energy. In Sanskrit, it's called bhakti. And the real desire of the soul is to love, to have closeness and connection, communion with others. That's our real happiness. So many times when we meet someone, if someone says, oh, I really love that person, and they have an instantaneous almost relationship, that means that it's actually the soul that is reminding that person subconsciously, this is the person you've been with. And also, by way of comparison, have you also noticed that there are people who are together for many years and they constantly fight and it's a terrible relationship. Well, these are people who have things to work out from previous life. Maybe they were even a little bit of enemies, or they have some karma together.
Sure.
Yeah. So we can't love. Here's the idea, George. We cannot give our love, or we can't have a relationship with someone in this lifetime, in any lifetime, unless we knew them in a previous lifetime. The fact is, if we have a child, parents just shower their love on a new soul. It's not just because it's also because they knew that person in a previous life. The boy may have been the father in the last life. This is common, and vice versa. So we give love to people based on what they gave to us in a previous life, or the relationship was there from a previous lifetime. Love is not arbitrary. You cannot just shower love upon someone unless there was a previous karmic relationship with that person in a previous life. In Sanskrit, that's called a sanskara. It means that the soul is reminding you of that previous relationship. Well, sometimes even, siblings could be the best of friends, or they could be Hatfield and McCoys. That means in their previous life they were always at each other's throats. So life is a continuum, George. When we pass away, when we die, there is no death. If someone's going to get a human body in the next life, it's within 6 months. They get a new. The demigods and the goddesses prepare a new body. They look for the right parents. They look for the right social atmosphere, the right country, according to what we think about at the time of death, and what we desire, and what we're attached to. We get parents or a social sphere or an education based on what we desired in a previous lifetime. So all of the people that we loved and that we came into contact with, even the people we have difficulties and struggles with, our enemies, it was just as Newton says, for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. We had the same relationships with those people in a different body. So death is just a change of body. So in the next life, we meet with those people again. Now what happens is, when soulmates break up, it's like two people just get tired of being with that soul again after maybe three or four lifetimes.
Some of it, it's like a death, isn't it?
What do you mean?
If soulmates break up, it's almost like somebody died.
It can be, yeah. And sometimes the relationship itself, what they're supposed to learn from each other or whatever, it just kind of naturally dies, and they meet the next partner to continue on their journey, you see. So it's kind of, in the Vedic astrology, it's likened to you're on the ocean and you see two pieces of straw, and they may stay intertwined for a long time, but then one wave comes and breaks the whole thing up. So we may have many relationships, many lifetimes with some person for a long time, whether they're a child or a grandpa or an intimate relationship, and it may, after 10, 15 lifetimes, we may never see that person again until we meet them again in the spiritual world.
Well, Vernon, let me ask you, too, then we'll go to some phone calls, about our relationships with pets, because I know a lot of people, myself included, who have had animals, still do in some cases, and there's this incredible tie-in between the person and the animal. What's that all about?
You know, the interesting thing, George, is that we are all sentient beings. Sentient beings. In other words, if you give a dog, a pet, he'll lick you. If you get mad at him, he'll bark and run away. Animals, especially dogs, they have a sentience about them. And astrologically, I'm going to say it to you this way. Many dogs in this Western society live almost like human beings. They don't go to work or anything. They don't drive cars, but they live as human beings almost. True?
Sure. I believe that.
They were human beings in their previous life, and they were part of the same family. They didn't have the karma their karma ran out to get a human body, but they still had enough karma to be part of that family and to be loved rather than having to work or something like that.
Well, and that's
They still have to be they have the karma to be part of that family because they're still loved. But they don't have the just kind of like karma is like having a bank account. They needed $100, let's say figuratively, to be a human being, but they only had 50. But they became a dog. Now I'm not saying anything against dogs per se. It's the change of body. Ultimately, we're not these material bodies. We're spiritual souls. There actually is no difference between us and a butterfly or an elephant. It's just the body. The most important thing about the human form of life, it's the only form of life where one can inquire about God and what are we here for. You know, animals, as wonderful and loving and great you know beings they are, they're not philosophical. They don't go to church. They don't they're instinctive. But when we have a human body, the goal of the human body is self-realization and to understand oneself and to ultimately understand our spiritual nature. So the human form of life is a rare thing. There may be 6 billion human beings on this planet, but if you look at how many animals and birds and worms and reptiles there are, there's not very many human beings on the planet. So to get a human birth is a very, very rare thing. But the point of human birth is not just to eat and sleep and mate and defend. The real point of human life is self-realization. And this is why palmistry and astrology are so, so important. Because when you're looking at someone's hand or you're reading someone's chart, you can help them to understand exactly why they're on this planet, what they took birth for, what their destiny is, how to bring out their loving propensities. This is the only form of life that we can actually become pure devotional, loving entities. You see. And give that back to others. In Sanskrit, it's called bhakti. Bhakti means unconditional love.
Do we pick our parents from the other side?
I do not believe that. I believe that we get parents, the demigods and the goddesses, who are let's say they're the universal management. They give us parents based on what we need to learn or our lessons. Sometimes parents give us the same lessons or challenges or struggles that we had in a previous life. No, I don't believe. According to what I see in people's hands, we do not pick our parents. What we do pick is our desires and our wants, and then we get parents to fulfill those. But having said that, just like I was saying before, we have those loving relationships with the parents, so we don't actually pick them. It comes to us by karma. You follow?
Karma is important here too, isn't it?
Karma means action and reaction, George. It is important. And really, if we do pious activities, if we do good activities, we get a reward. You know, like Newton said, for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. And the thing is that, you know, pious activities bring... If someone does good things for others, like, for instance, they open hospitals, or they're charitable, or they're just good people, they take care of their family. In their next life, they'll be born with a beautiful-looking body, their parents will be able to provide well for them, they'll go to a good school, they'll have a good intelligence. If someone does bad activities, what I mean, you know, they're cruel, they're not very, they don't take care of themselves, they do a lot of drugs, they don't help other people, you get the picture. They will be born in a situation they're reaping the rewards of their karma. But the interesting thing about human life and what I see day after day is, for instance, I know a good friend in New York, And years ago, you know, he was telling me he didn't have a father. You know, his father was absent-minded, absent from him.
Absent from his life.
But so what happened was he just said, I'm not going to be that way anymore. I'm going to take care of my daughter. And he's a great father.
Sure,
so
you learn that.
Exactly. So sometimes that action and reaction is put in front of us so we could become better people. You know, he had every reason. He came from, you know, the South Bronx. He came from a very poor family. He had every reason to be an absent father. But he didn't. He took the higher road. And then he learned from his mistakes. So the thing is that we have that free will to change and shape our destiny. And if we do good for others or ourselves or for the world, it does come back. I see that every single day. And it's not a fact that people say, well, you know, it just seems like the evil get away with evil. Well, that, you know, I look at a lot of people who are in this world. You could even, people who do bad activities, they're not happy. They may be richer. They may live in bigger houses, but they're not happy.
Deep down inside, you know, they're not.
Exactly, because the face is the index of the heart. The face is the index of the mind. And sometimes the poorest people could be happy because they have their family. They're loved. And sometimes the richest people I've ever met, you know, like in Beverly Hills, are the most miserable people. I see it all the time.
Sure, me too.
So the thing is, money doesn't make us happy. No. You know what makes us happy? Relationships, closeness, connections. Obviously, we need money. And the other thing that I see that makes us happy is when we have a life purpose that we can put all our time.
Well, you need enough. You need enough to be able to live comfortably without stress, regardless of what that standard is for you. I mean, I know people who live in mobile homes who are as happy, if not happier, than people who are living in mansions.
Absolutely. And one thing, it's absolutely true what you're saying. And one thing that I see all the time, I mean, not just in clients, but just in, you know, just looking at people's hands on the internet. But the fact is that if you do bad activities, it will come back to you. It may not come back in this life. Many times people reap the reward of the bad activities in their next life. And many times people do good activities and they think, why aren't I being rewarded? Well, in their next life, they'll be rewarded.
Yep.
You know, the fact is that nothing is a coincidence. There is a God, and he's intelligent. And there is a goddess, and she's even more intelligent. So the fact is that there's a God and a goddess who are at the top, and they are the most loving and warm and affectionate entities.
All right, well, you stay with us. Vernon, we're going to take this quick break. We're going to come back and take promised phone calls, beginning with Sioux City, Iowa, Seattle, the Bronx, Massachusetts, Canada. They're all over the place, and we'll come and get you. Okay, welcome back. Vernon Mulhubble is with us, and, of course, your phone calls finally. Let's go to William in Sioux City, Iowa. William, thanks for holding. Go ahead, sir.
Well, good morning, George. And, Vernon, you know, the question I have is palmistry reading basically predicts the future and some of your past lives. Is that not correct?
Well, I don't like to predict the future in that way. I feel the best way to read a hand is to empower someone by telling them, this is your talent, this is where you'll get consistent results, this is where you'll be successful. It may not be where you're going to make millions of dollars, but it'll be where you become happy and successful and you make your life a masterpiece. So I don't like to do predictions like, you know, the gypsy type of thing, but what I do is let a person know what is their destiny, why they were born, why they're here at this particular time, and how to attain self-realization.
Well, now the question I have that counters that is prophecy. Prophecy basically cannot be changed. We have free will and things, but in prophecy, they don't give you an option A or option B. That's why they call it prophecy, or like the Bible, you know, the prophecy.
Well, they may call it prophecy all they want, but the fact is we do have free will. That independence is never taken away from us. Just like I can, that's why I don't make predictions. I can tell someone, okay, if you do this, you'll become successful and happy. But the point is, if you look at it as, oh, this is destiny, it can never be changed, then why didn't God make us a bunch of robots then? The symptom of the soul is eternality, and the symptom of eternality is individuality. We have individuality. That individuality is our independence and our ability to change and shape our world and our environment can never be taken away. And I see this on a day-to-day basis. Do you know how many times I see people who just take a little bit of talent and they work hard and they achieve much? And do you know how many times I see people who have a tremendous amount of talent and ability and just do drugs all day?
Yep, wasted talent.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't agree with you. I respect you and I understand what you're saying, but I don't know. I can't from the work that I do. I don't agree with you.
Okay, back to the phones we go. Next up, we go to Seattle. Miles is with us now. Hi, Miles. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey. You're the greatest of all time, man. I love listening to you.
Thank you, sir.
You there?
Yeah.
Yeah. My question is, you can read hands. Can you read feet too?
That's a great question. I like that question. Feet deal mostly with health. And anything that you can see on a person's foot or feet can be seen also on the hands. There is feet reading, but it's limited to health trends. But again, that can be seen on the hands.
Now, and that I spend a lot of time looking at the bottom of my feet, but I guess it must have similar patterns than the palms, right?
Similar, yeah. For sure, but the planets are arranged in different ways, and it's a much more simplistic system, and it deals mainly with the chakras, if you will, that deal with health.
Have you read palms of like monkeys? They have palm prints too, don't they?
They have what's called the simian line. And they have little hash marks on their hands, but you know the thing is, George, they work on instinct. They're not able to have a specific. In other words, they have individuality, they have independence, but it's extremely limited compared to a human being.
All right.
And their hands reflect that. The symbols or the markings on their hands reflect that.
Now, when we pass on, when we go to the other side, and you're, you know, wrestling with whether we come back, whether there's reincarnation, what's the process of returning?
In the Vedic view, we call it transmigration of the soul. And what that means is that according to what activities or things that we've done in this life, we take a corresponding body in the next life to fulfill the desires. Just like a person in a previous life had a desire to be a pianist. So, you know, so when the kid is 5 years old, the parents give her a piano. She just wants a piano. She wants a piano at 5 or 6 years old and she takes lessons. It's because in a previous life she was a pianist. So life is a continuum, and because we're eternal, death is just a change of body. There is no death. It's kind of like just getting into a car. We don't become the car. We just get into a car. If the car dies, we buy a new car, get into a new car. We are the driver of the car. The soul is the driver, and we are not the car. So the biggest problem in society today is that people think we are the car. We are this material body, and we are part and parcel of this material tabernacle. We're not. We're spiritual, and the real goal of human life is love, and to love our career, to love the people around us, to love animals, to love the planet, just devotional love. And so when we attain that, we will enter into the spiritual realm. We'll attain the spiritual planets. There is no death. As soon as a person dies, if a person gets a human form of life, it's within 6 months or less. We're lamenting for someone. Of course, when we lose a loved one, of course, it's heavy. But at the same time, we shouldn't worry about them, because that person will be in a baby body almost instantaneously. So there is no death. Is simply a change of body. This is what I see on people's hands all the time, and many times those people re-enter into our life in a different body.
Have you ever seen palm prints change?
I had a friend growing up. His name was Monty. He could barely read until he was like, let's say, 19. And then at 19 or 20, he really, really tried to read. And his lines kind of changed a little bit. What I saw in his hand was that the ability to read was there. And the fact is that he worked really hard to learn to read. And so he put his time and energy into doing that. And in that way, the lines, in if you will, showed that he not only had the ability to do it, but he did it. And I see the other aspects a lot, where people have tremendous, you know, some of the things that's most sad is when you see someone who has tremendous talent or ability in a particular field, and they just drink and do drugs and just waste their life. That's difficult. That's the part that makes me sad. And so my job as a palmist is to give people the tools to let them know, okay, this is the road you should be on, and this is how to get there. My goal, my job, if you will, is to help people to understand who they are and make them powerful, make them individualistic again. And that's why I love America, because America is built on the idea of individualism. It's built on that desire of, if you work hard, you'll get places, you know. But that's how I see my job as a palmist. Never really to just give predictions, because that's disempowering. But to tell someone, okay, you have this talent, you have this ability, and this is how to make it happen. And then when they do start to make it happen, that's when they become happy.
Go ahead, finish up.
Well, because really what I see makes people happy is when they work hard and they appreciate the results of what they're getting.
Let's go to Joe in the Bronx. Joe, go ahead.
George, how are you?
Good, Joe.
I wanted to ask you, I guess, Vernon, Mercury is in retrograde. We're having the UN meet in New York. We're having the Pope come to New York at the same time. What effect, if any, will Mercury in retrograde? What will be the ramifications?
I hope, great question. I hope it destroys all their plans, because the UN is satanic, the Pope is satanic. All these people are to me, they're all sociopaths. So I hope Mercury retrograde is going to do something to them, because the people don't deserve these people. I mean, the whole idea here is that the Pope is there to represent what the Bible says. And for him to say that abortion is okay, or that, you know, the things he has been saying, he has to live up to what his Bible says, and he's not. So I hope Mercury retrograde is actually working and it destroys their plans, because they're the satanic people, the UN and all these people.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. A couple minutes just to go. Let's talk a little bit, Vernon, on where people can still get your books. Go ahead.
Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, yeah, just go to Amazon.com. And my website is palmistryinstitute.com, if a person wants.
Do you teach people how to read palms?
I love doing that. Teaching is where it's at. I love, you know, the thing is, George, when I was coming up as a palmist, I didn't see a lot of my brethren, my peers, really understand the palmistry. I learned so much more from astrologers.
Yeah.
So my goal as a palmist is to read hands, that in a way that brings dignification to back to the science, and also teach it in a way so that it regains its esteem and its former glory. Palmistry was practiced in every ancient culture. The Hindus, the Egyptians, every single culture practiced astrology, and it's only been in the last, let's say, 200 years that it's fallen into disrepute because of practitioners who shouldn't be doing it. But the fact is also, George, that palmistry and astrology are, you know, maligned by modern mainstream academia, but the fact is that you'd be surprised by how many people who are rich and successful in business and entertainment and politics who get readings and who don't tell people.
You're absolutely right on that. Let's go to...
it's a hidden secret. It's really a hidden secret. Can I say something more real quick? Joanne Quigley, I think she was the astrologer of, you know, it came out that Reagan and his wife, you know, had an astrologer.
Oh, they had that, yeah.
It was no big news to astrologers. It was what else is new?
Yeah.
The fact is that most business people go to astrologers or palmists or even psychics. They just in the Western world, they just don't really talk about it too much.
Let's go to Sean in Redding, California now. That's west of the Rockies. Hello, Sean. Good morning.
Hi, thanks, man. I'm so glad to be on with your guest. I really like everything you're saying. I really I think what you do is great, and this is super important.
Okay.
I wanted to just ask you something real quick. You were talking about the planets. I wonder if I feel like astrology might be limiters to divide us, and that you know, they base them on the planets to reinforce that the planets exist the way they do. But for all intents and purposes, it seems like they just could be a perception on a dome.
That's a great question, sir. It's a great question. Planets never they help us to achieve what we're trying to achieve. If we work with them, they give us their good energies. They don't make us do anything. You know, they don't impel. They only help. You see what I mean? You know, and if we're in a bad planetary period, we're there to learn something about it. Just like, you know, we're going to go through another couple of years and maybe 2.5 years of more of what's going on in our country. Actually, be honest with you, this is a good time for us if we look at it in a spiritual way and look at, hey, we have not been vigilant about our government. You know, we're allowing the entertainment industry to make the abnormal seem normal. In other words, this is a great time for us to be vigilant citizens again and to look at what's going on. But the planets are not they don't force anything. Don't look at it in that way. Look at it in the fact that, for instance, if a person is meant to be an architect in this life, the planets are in those positions that the demigods and goddesses put those planets in, so that that person has the minerals, if you will, to become the architect. Do you follow what I mean?
All right, Vernon, we are almost out of time. Seconds to go. What do you do next? What's your next work, your project?
I'm working on a new book, and I just read hands all day.
I love that. All right, Vernon, yeah. You take care of yourself.
Hey, George, you're the best interviewer in the world. Thank you so much for your service to our country, too.
All right, thank you. I appreciate that. We'd love for you to be able to read the palms of every presidential candidate that we've got. That would be interesting. And just release it all to us on Coast to Coast AM. Remarkable, remarkable night. Don't forget to call your congresspeople and senators in the morning about the EMP and the solar flares. We've got to protect the power grid. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.